Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. Seriously, have you ever really stopped to think about the tangled roots of modern nations? Or how often those, you know, smooth, easy historical narratives totally gloss over some incredibly complex, maybe even messy, stories? Well, today we're doing exactly that. Welcome back to The Deep Dive, where we crack open dense topics and pull out the most important insights for you. This deep dive is all about a really profound book, A Concise History of Modern India by Barbara D. Metcalf and Thomas R. Metcalf. We're going to unpack the core insights from these, well, distinguished historians, guiding you through the intricate story of how India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh came to be. Our mission, as always, is to move beyond those conventional narratives and really understand the dynamic interplay, the push and pull that forged modern South Asia. For me, what jumps out right away from this book is its main argument, modern India. It's not just a legacy of British rule, you know, nor is it some simple linear path from its ancient past. It's actually a complex, often contested outcome of this continuous interaction between Indian society and British imperialism, like a constant dance and negotiation.
Yeah, and what's truly illuminating is how the Metcalfs tackle that fundamental question head on. How did the modern nations of India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh come to be? They show that key concepts we kind of take for granted now, like nation, community, religion, even caste, were profoundly reshaped, often hardened, really, during this colonial encounter. And those changes, as they lay out, have these enduring consequences that are still shaping the subcontinent today. It's a completely different, vital way to look at history.
That foundational point is incredibly powerful. And to really get how they built such a nuanced view, we should probably talk about the scholars themselves, right?
Yeah.
What makes Barbara and Thomas Metcalf so uniquely suited for this?
Right. Well, Barbara Metcalf, she's Professor Emerita from UC Davis and a really leading voice on South Asian Islam, especially the religious and intellectual history. Her work, particularly on the Deobandi movement, this Islamic revivalist movement, gives you this crucial, nuanced view of Muslim society. It gets way beyond simplistic ideas, you know, helps us understand the internal diversity, the evolution of religious life from the inside.
Yeah.
And then Thomas Metcalf, Professor Emeritus from UC Berkeley, his focus is more on the British Empire side, the history of colonialism in India, the ideology behind the Raj, even things like colonial architecture. His work really digs into the motivations, the structures, the sheer impact of the colonial state.
Ah, I see. So it's that combination, their husband and wife team approach, that creates this amazing synergy. It lets them analyze both sides' British actions and Indian responses. It makes it a narrative of like intricate dialogue, how they shaped each other. You really get to see it from multiple angles.
Exactly. It's not just what the British did to India, but this complex interaction.
Okay, so let's dig deeper into how they actually break down this intricate story.
Mm-hmm.
You said the book challenges us.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just oppression and resistance. It's more complicated.
Precisely. The book's core aim is to be this accessible but still deeply scholarly introduction to the historical processes that shape today's South Asia. It deliberately avoids just listing, you know, great men or big events.
Right.
It focuses instead on the broad social, economic, ideological currents, the underlying forces driving change.
And wow, what a journey it maps out. The narrative arc is huge. It kicks off in the 18th century, which they show is dynamic, not just decaying Mughal power, but these successor states popping up.
Mm.
Then it meticulously tracks the, frankly, astonishing rise of the East India Company.
Yeah.
How does a private trading firm become an empire?
Right.
From there, we see the British Raj solidifying not just military power, but ideological tools, administrative stuff like the census, courts, railways.
And then the book pivots. It looks at the many Indian responses, the birth and evolution of nationalism, its internal fights, different visions, which ultimately leads to partition.
And finally, it tackles the huge challenges of nation building after independence for India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. It really connects the dots to the present.
Yeah, it's a massive sweep.
This is where I personally found it so captivating, the way they guide you through time. Each period reveals some deeper transformation you might not have expected. What were some of the key moments or insights that stood out for you in that chronological journey?
Well, one of the first big things they do is kind of shatter that old colonial myth of India being static or decaying before the British fully arrived. The 18th century, they argue, wasn't anarchy. It was actually a time of really vibrant regional state building. You had powerful states like Awadh, Bengal, Hyderabad emerging, plus lots of commercial activity, political innovation. It was dynamic.
That completely reframes it, doesn't it? The idea that the British didn't just conquer some unified, crumbling empire, but they actually exploited the dynamism and rivalries already there. It suggests a much more opportunistic, maybe even calculated, expansion.
Exactly. And that leads right into the East India Company's rise, roughly 1757 to 1857. And the insight here is stunning. It wasn't just battles like Plassey or Buxar. Those were the moments, the pivots, that led a trading company grab control of taxation. That shift from merchant to ruler is just historically unprecedented. It sets the stage for everything.
Hold on. A trading company becoming a political power? That still sounds almost unreal.
Mm-hmm.
What were the specific things, the levers they pulled to make that happen so relatively quickly?
Well, yeah, it wasn't just winning on the battlefield. They used clever political mechanisms, things like subsidiary alliances, basically, offering princes military protection, but taking control in return. And the infamous doctrine of lapis annexing states if there wasn't a direct male heir, it was often piecemeal, kind of improvised, driven by, frankly, commercial greed and strategic advantage, not some grand plan from London initially.
Okay, so they grabbed this power. Then the early Raj shifts from just conquering to actually governing. What were the big debates then about how to rule India?
Right, so now they have to manage this huge territory, and you get these competing philosophies. On one hand, the Orientalists, they thought Britain should rule through Indian traditions, learning Sanskrit, Persian, respecting local customs. But then you had the Anglicists, the utilitarians, think Comus Macaulay. They were like, no, we need to remake India in a Western image, English education, Western law. That's the way forward, a real clash of ideas.
And the consequences were massive. New legal systems, a huge bureaucracy, this English education model designed to create, well, an anglicized Indian elite.
Mm.
It fundamentally changed things for generations.
But all these changes, the annexations, the economic disruption, the cultural anxieties, it all built up. And it culminated in this massive explosion in 1857. The Metcalfes argue really compellingly, it wasn't just a mutiny of soldiers, it was a watershed moment. A century of grievances boiling over princes who lost land, landlords dispossessed, peasants squeezed by taxes, plus this deep fear of forced conversion to Christianity.
Yeah, and the British reaction was incredibly brutal, that suppression had transformative effects. The East India Company was gone, replaced by direct rule from the Crown, the official British Raj. The army got reorganized, favoring certain groups they called martial races, which created divisions.
Yeah.
And racial attitudes just hardened significantly, a real turning point.
Definitely. So moving into what they call the high noon of the Raj, roughly 1858 to 1914, the focus shifts. Now it's about the Raj trying to know India, to classify it, to control it more effectively. This epistemological project.
Ooh, yeah.
Things like the census, ethnographic surveys, massive efforts to map and categorize this incredibly complex society.
And what's fascinating, almost ironic, is how these projects didn't just record what was there. The book shows how they actively constructed and hardened identities like caste and religion. By trying to put everyone in neat boxes for administrative ease, they kind of cemented those divisions, made them more politically relevant than maybe they'd been before. It's like trying to map a river and accidentally building dams, right?
That's a good analogy.
And we also see huge infrastructure projects, like the railways. But the Metcalfes point out, these were built mainly for military control and getting resources out, creating this sort of enclave economy serving Britain.
But this era of control also sees the first real stirrings of organized nationalism. You get the emergence of this new Western-educated Indian elite, many of whom then formed the Indian National Congress in 1885.
Right. And initially, it was quite moderate, just asking for more representation. But it evolved, didn't it? Especially after that hugely unpopular partition of Bengal in 1905. That really ignited things, sparked the Swadeshi movement, this big push for self-reliance, boycotting British goods. And importantly, this period also saw the seeds of communal politics, with the Muslim League forming in 1906, asking different questions about representation.
Then the game changes completely. Mohandas K. Gandhi arrives back in India in 1915. He transforms nationalism with his philosophy of Satyagraha truth force and nonviolent civil disobedience. It went from being maybe an elite concern to a genuine mass movement that mobilized people across the country in ways never seen before.
He really did revolutionize tactics and reach. You see it in the things like the non-cooperation movement in the early 20s and that iconic Salt March in 1930, just incredible mobilization. But Gandhi's vision wasn't purely political, was it? The book highlights his critique of modern industrial life, his focus on village self-sufficiency, Gram Swaraj, his deep commitment to Hindu-Muslim unity, and uplifting the untouchables, who he called Harijans, a whole social vision.
Absolutely. But the 1920s and 30s also show nationalism wasn't monolithic. there were significant diverging paths, internal fractures. While Gandhi and Congress were dominant, powerful counter-narratives were emerging.
That raises a really key point the book explores. How did these different groups actually see India's future? Because you have Muhammad Ali Jinnah and the Muslim League increasingly pushing the two-nation theory, that Hindus and Muslims were fundamentally separate nations. And then you have Dr. B.R. Ambedkar fiercely challenging everyone, the British, Congress on behalf of the untouchable communities, demanding separate political rights and safeguards. It definitely wasn't one unified movement.
Not at all. And the climax really comes with World War II. The war fatally weakens the British Empire, makes holding on to India untenable. The 1940s are just packed with political turmoil. You have Congress launching the Quit India movement in 42. British attempts at negotiation fail. Jinnah's demand for Pakistan becomes absolute. And tragically, it's fueled by horrific communal violence like the Great Calcutta Killing in 1946. Things were spiraling.
And partition itself.
Mm-hmm.
The Metcalfes frame it not as some ancient, inevitable clash of religions, but more as a tragic political miscalculation by everyone involved, Congress, the League, the British, a failure of leadership that resulted in one of the largest, most violent mass migrations in history. A truly devastating outcome, they suggest, could have been avoided.
A profound tragedy.
Yeah.
So after independence in 1947, you get the Nehruvian era up to 64. Nehru establishes India as secular, democratic, leaning socialist, non-aligned internationally. Huge challenges, of course. Drafting the constitution, integrating hundreds of princely states into India, a monumental task.
Then after Nehru, the landscape shifts again. You see Indira Gandhi's more centralized, sometimes authoritarian style, culminating in the emergency in the mid-70s, but also the Green Revolution, changing agriculture, and the definite rise of caste and regional parties challenging Congress's dominance.
Right, and the story continues into the late 20th, early 21st century. Two big trends the Metcalfes highlight. First, economic liberalization in 1991, dismantling the old license raj, leading to rapid growth, but also rising inequality. And second, the powerful rise of Hindu nationalism, symbolized by things like the campaign for the Ram Temple in Ayodhya, the demolition of the Babri Masjid in 92, and the political ascent of the BJP.
And so the book brings us pretty much up to the present, highlighting these enduring tensions in modern India, the constant pull between its democratic pluralist ideals and these strong pressures from religious majoritarianism, global economics, and deep social inequalities. It's a story that's still unfolding. So after that incredible sweep through history, what does it all mean? The Metcalfes weave together some really powerful recurring themes that help make sense of it all. What are those big threads?
Yeah, there are several key takeaways. One is definitely the sheer complexity of colonial transformation. It wasn't just Britain imposing things. It was this mutual shaping, negotiation, creating these hybrid forms of governance. It challenges simple stories from both sides, imperial defenders and nationalist critics. It's messier, more human.
Right, not just black and white.
Exactly. And connected to that is the construction of modern Indian identities. This is huge. They show how categories we think of as fixed religion, caste, even language, were actively shaped, defined, and hardened by British administrative needs. The census, electoral rules, these things made identities more rigid and politically charged.
So the act of classifying changed the reality.
Precisely. Another theme is the diverse and contested nature of Indian nationalism. It was never just one thing. It was this big umbrella covering competing visions. The secular elite, Gandhi's mass movement, the Muslim League's idea of separate nations, Ambedkar's fight against caste, a whole spectrum of conflicting dreams for India.
Yeah, not a single voice.
Then there's the paradox of colonial modernity. Yes, the British brought railways, telegraphs, new education systems, but this modernity was always partial, always designed primarily to serve imperial interests. It created new possibilities, sure, but also new forms of exploitation and control. It wasn't a gift.
Okay, what else? The persistence of indigenous agency. This is so important. Indians weren't just passive victims. At all levels, people actively shaped their own lives, adapted colonial institutions, subverted them sometimes. They were actors in their own history, not just reacting.
Making their own choices within the constraints.
Exactly.
And finally, you absolutely cannot understand the region without grappling with the enduring legacy of partition. The book treats it not just as an event in 1947, but as this foundational trauma whose echoes are still felt today in geopolitics like Kashmir and in communal identities across India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. The wounds are still there.
Okay, let's bring this right home. Why should someone listening right now care about this history? What are the real-life applications, the relevance for us today?
Well, first and foremost, this book gives you the essential background for understanding contemporary South Asian politics. Seriously. Issues like the India-Pakistan conflict, ongoing debates about caste discrimination, the tension between secularism and religious nationalism, political dynamics. It's all deeply rooted in the history the Metcalfes explain. It's like the essential context.
It gives you the why behind the headlines.
Yeah,
exactly. Second, it offers a really critical perspective on identity politics everywhere, not just in India. Seeing how identities like religion or caste were constructed and politicized by state actions and political movements, that helps you understand similar dynamics and conflicts all over the world. It makes you a smarter observer of global affairs.
That's a really powerful point. It makes you question assumptions about identity.
Third, it's incredibly valuable for appreciating the challenges of nation building. India's story, trying to forge unity out of immense diversity, dealing with language, minority rights, economic development after colonialism, offers huge lessons for other post-colonial nations, and frankly, for any diverse society. It shows how hard that work is.
Yeah, the struggles are universal in some ways.
Fourth, it helps you deconstruct the very idea of modernity. It challenges that simple Eurocentric view that progress just flows from the West. It shows how modernity in a colonial context was paradoxical new tech, yes, but also new forms of exploitation. It makes you ask, what does progress even mean and for whom?
Good question.
And fifth, honestly, it's just crucial for informed global citizenship. India is a rising global power. Understanding its complex history, its society, its politics beyond the usual stereotypes, that's essential for anyone engaging with the world today. This book gives you that necessary nuance. I think for me, the most valuable lesson, the biggest takeaway from A Concise History of Modern India is that the past isn't really past. It's incredibly active in the present, in today's structures, institutions, conflicts. And maybe the deepest insight is realizing how fundamental categories like Hindu, Muslim, caste were transformed by the colonial experience. They became these potent political identities in ways they hadn't necessarily been before, and that continues to shape the lives of, what, over a billion people today.
Yeah, for me, this deep dive really offered a paradigm shift. It moves away from seeing Indian history as just a passive reaction to the British. Instead, it's this dynamic two-way interaction that created something entirely new, something uniquely modern in India, shaped by its ancient past, yes, but also profoundly by colonialism and by its own ongoing effort to define itself after independence. So, thinking about all this, what does India's complex, often difficult journey teach us about the ongoing challenges of balancing unity and diversity in our own societies today? And how do those historical echoes we've talked about continue to shape current global dynamics and our very understanding of what it means to build a nation? See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.